The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Fans, can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Welcome in, everyone, to the Bastards of Boston Baseball. The Red Sox leave the winter meetings in Orlando with not one, not two, but actually zero impactful bats for their lineup and no number two starter to speak of. In fact, they didn't really sign anybody this entire week. So Craig Breslow is coming back to Boston empty-handed. Meanwhile, the big news of the day, the rival Baltimore Orioles signed Pete Alonso to a five-year, $155 million contract. So another big quote-unquote target for the Red Sox is off the board. I'm your host, Jason Kelly. I'm here with Terry Cushman and Chris Felico. Guys, this is we're quickly heading into depression territory with this offseason because the three of us were just on this podcast two nights ago saying that, well, okay, you're probably not going to get Schwarber, but Pete Alonso, what a great fit he would be. He would solve so many problems, and you can probably get him for a good price. You're meeting with him this week. It's all going to go well. And then we get the news this morning that the Baltimore Orioles sweep out Pete Alonso from under your feet. They grab him. Again, 5 years, $155. Not exactly a ridiculous contract, in my opinion. So, Chris, I'll start with you. What was your reaction to losing Pete Alonso to not just anyone, but the Orioles of all teams?
I mean, I'm shocked that we lost out to the Orioles on this. And I shouldn't be, but I mean, I've got so many thoughts on this whole thing, and it goes beyond Pete Alonso at this point. But I mean, if they had just listened to what I said on the show a couple of nights ago, 5 years, 140, I feel like that probably would have got it done if they were more aggressive in this. You know, in the war room, even Terry was saying, like, to be worried about the Baltimore Orioles. And I actually was like, no, I'm worried about the Mets. I would never worry about the Baltimore Orioles. And my God, I was wrong. I mean, to think that we are living in an age now where the Yankees and Red Sox literally have not spent a dime in free agency. And the Baltimore Orioles, Toronto Blue Jays, hell, even the Tampa Bay Rays have spent money is absolutely freaking absurd at this point. And I can't believe I'm saying this. Because I'm not at the point now where I'm going to start saying fire Breslow. I'm getting pretty damn close, but I miss Chaim Bloom. I freaking miss Chaim Bloom. I never thought I'd say it, but that's the point on that, because I mean, with Chaim Bloom, it was like he wouldn't pull the trigger on trades. And, you know, I see a lot of people giving Breslow tons of credit on like the trades he's made and being quote unquote uncomfortable. And the Garrett Crochet trade was a no-brainer. I think anyone could have executed it with our farm system. So I don't even give him credit on that. So outside of that, I don't know where this uncomfortable comes from. But this man will not spend any money. And it is absurd at this point. I mean, Chaim Bloom extended Rafael Devers. And he signed Masataki Yoshida to a contract we all hate. And we literally had the exact person on the market that we needed. And yeah, it'd be great if Pete was a Gold Glove or first baseman. And you know what? Maybe if he was, we would have signed him. But you know what? He probably would have been able to command a hell of a lot more money. But the fact that, I mean, he was everything this freaking offense needed, and we just completely pissed ourselves to where we couldn't get this deal done when it's a no-brainer, no competition except the Baltimore freaking Orioles, is pathetic. I'm at a loss of words right now.
So as I said privately in the war room, I'm basically on the fire Breslow wagon now. I'll just as a matter of due diligence, just as a matter of the fact that I've this is probably going to be my eighth or ninth season on this podcast, I'm going to wait just in case. But Pete Alonso was the no-brainer move. That was the no-brainer move. Solved every problem. And one of the things that pissed me off was a quote from Breslow where he's, or maybe it wasn't a quote, it was a report that said the Red Sox were wary of Pete Alonso's age. He's played 155 or more games in every season after the pandemic, and probably before the pandemic, but let's just go with the recent history here. There's no red flags to suggest this guy's gonna decline. There's no red flags whatsoever. If you bring Alex Bregman back, there's tons of red flags. There's tons of red flags, and there's a pattern of regression. Pete Alonso just had one of the best years of his career by some metrics. And it would have been real easy. If the Red Sox matched that offer, $155 million, that's $31 million per year for 5 years, takes him to age 36. If they simply matched it, we got him. You're not going to pick Baltimore over Boston. Like, no offense, Baltimore, but, you know, that part of the country is a shithole. It's not a destination city. A lot of players don't end up choosing Baltimore. Pete Alonso didn't have a huge market. I mean, it was basically just the Red Sox, maybe the Mets if he wanted a short-term deal, or the Orioles. And when the Orioles missed out on Schwarber, instantly I'm like, well, I mean, that's one team that's gonna pivot. And the Red Sox didn't get him. And where have they pivoted? What's their pivot? The name we're hearing a lot right now is Suarez, Eugenio Suarez. And Chris, you had a similar, or rather Jason, my apologies, had a similar tweet on Bregman earlier, you know, being the same age as Alonso. Eugenio Suarez is going to be 35 years old. Oh, but they're not worried about him, you know? You know, Pete Alonso in age 35, that would be the fourth out of 5 years of his contract. So if we're not worried about 35-year-olds at age 35, why are we worried about age 31, 32, 33, and 34?
It's ridiculous. And I don't know if the whole they were hesitant about his age thing is just them trying to, you know, wipe it clean a little bit, because how much did you lowball him? Because the first report we heard after he signed with Baltimore is that Boston's offer was less years and significantly less money. Not just less money in general, significantly less. So how much did you try to lowball this guy? Did you try to get him for like 4 years, 100 or something? And you just, and with no incentives, no, you know, way to kind of scale up? Like, because I think with Baltimore, he's got escalators in that contract too. So he can earn even more. I think Boston probably just offered him a baseline 4 years, 100 or 4 years, 110, and with no deferrals, no escalators, nothing, just left it at that and said, yeah, okay, that feels good. We should probably get him now. And then Baltimore just came in and said, now we'll give you the extra year and more. And he just took it. Because I got to wonder, like, we heard from Will Fleming, who has subsequently quit Twitter. Sorry, Twitter, Will Fleming's gone. We heard from Carrabas. Carrabas yesterday was sending tweets to Mets fans saying he's my polar bear now. So who were those guys talking to that was telling them, yeah, we got Alonso, don't worry about it. Like, we got this in the bag. Because whoever that guy is, they probably shouldn't use him as a source anymore, because I don't know if it was like someone told that guy, hey, the contract's really good, he's going to sign it, there's no way he doesn't. And then Baltimore just came in and said, oh, wait a minute, we'll give you that fifth year. I don't know. I'm just curious how, you know, it went from those guys being so confident and literally tweeting out into the ether, like, yep, you guys are going to be real happy with what you're about to hear, to Will Fleming has to quit Twitter because he's so embarrassed. And Carrabba is sitting there today going, what the hell happened? And that's what we're all asking. What the hell happened? This should have been a no-brainer, especially when Schwarber went off the board. It's like, okay, well, now Alonso's the next big target. Like, get in there, get the contract done. There's no reason you couldn't have signed this guy. And the only reason you probably didn't get him is because, as usual, you lowballed him. Like, it's got to be that. Because like you said, Terry, why would he want to go to Baltimore over Boston? Like, I get it. They've got a pretty good team. Their lineup is very good. They've got a lot of good young players. But they took a massive step back last year. And their pitching rotation is still very suspect. So why would he choose them over Boston, who was a playoff team, has an established ace, has guys like Roman Anthony and Marcelo Meyer, you know, developing and making their way through. Trevor Story had a career year last year. Like, he should have wanted to pick Boston. So I have to think the only reason he didn't is because you offered him an insulting contract, which it's just like, are we doing this again? Have we not learned our lesson from the last decade of, you know, between Mookie Betts and all these other guys that we've lost because we tried to lowball them? It's just crazy to me. And now the whole thing is, well, now they can pivot, right? You get people saying, okay, well, don't worry. They can pivot and, you know, they can get Bregman, Marte, and Akimoto. Bregman's 31. So he's, as we said, same age as Alonso, which apparently scares them, but I don't know. Maybe it doesn't. Ketel Marte's 32. But is it okay because he's already signed and it's a team-friendly deal, so they don't care about his age? Like, okay, so age doesn't matter if you have a team-friendly deal? That's my guess. And then Akimoto's 29 and he's never played in the U.S. So, yeah, he's got big power numbers over in Japan, but who's to say that's going to translate over here? Everyone hits home runs in Japan. So, yeah, he's going to have to pivot, and it's going to have to be a strong pivot now, because if he loses out on Bregman, if he doesn't trade for Marte and someone else beats him to the punch on that one, suddenly the names are going to start coming off the board real quick. And as you guys mentioned, like, at that point, are we stuck with Eugenio Suarez? Like, that's scary. That's a scary drop-off, and it could happen real fast if Craig doesn't get on his horse and do something.
The truth is, it already has happened, because there's nothing on the market that's going to excite any of us at this point. The only way we can salvage what's happened is through the trade market. Yeah, I mean, you could sign Bregman, but again, that gets us whole in the sense that we're the same team as last year. And all we did was talk about improving this team. That's, but the message was out there from the front office, out in the media. I mean, there's not one person that hasn't said it was all about improving this team. And right now, there is a real reality. We might be worse. As crazy as that sounds.
And we are worse.
Yeah, no, I mean, we are worse now, but what I really want to understand is, what the hell is the front office going to say this time? Because you know what? We've all, to a certain degree, as a fan base, fallen for this bull crap of, like, they're going to spend money. It's going to be different this time. But I mean, for years now, 2-3 years ago, it was all about, we got to wait for the kids to come up. You know, we're not going to spend it now because let's wait for Roman Anthony. Let's wait for Kyle Teal. Let's wait for Marcelo Meyer. But when they come up, that's the time to strike. Well, they're up. And you know what? We're still not spending the money. So now what? And it's not even that crazy of money. And you got rid of the Devers money. So, like, you got rid of $300 million, and all you had to do is spend half of it. You can still pocket the other half from the Devers contract. I don't understand what the hell we're doing. It makes absolutely no sense. And Terry, I don't blame you for being at the point of fire Breslow, because it's clear that he is just inept when it comes to reading the market, negotiating fairly, to your point, Jason. And it's every offseason, every trade deadline, we go from nothing's happening, which is typical in baseball, right? And then all of a sudden that first pin drops, and then all the pieces on the board start moving, and he's like, he has no idea what the hell to do. And it's like, at some point, you can't help but just think, maybe this is what John Henry wants. And I said it before on a show a couple episodes ago, like, maybe this is exactly who he wants running this organization. Someone that's scared, because scared guys aren't going to make moves that are going to cost him money at this point. And I hate to say it, but like that's what goes to my mind at this point.
I want to get to two quotes here. And I filed this one in the back of my mind yesterday. It bothered me, but I'm like, foolishly, I'm still thinking we're in play here for Alonzo. And but after the Alonzo signing by Baltimore, this quote came back like to the forefront of my mind and really haunted me. This was from yesterday. Breslow says, quote, "Everybody goes into the offseason with their ideal outcomes, and you quickly realize that it's the most unlikely path." Now, that should have been a red flag at the time. Like, he should have been at the top of the list. And I think probably by yesterday, they probably knew they weren't going to be signing Pete Alonso. And when he says he goes in with his ideal outcome, what was the number he had in mind? You guys have already touched on this. I think it might have been something even stupider, like 3 years, $75 million. Maybe that's what Breslow and in his weird Harvard mind, where he's not very self-aware, he's not. You know, savvy at all as far as being a front office executive. He is the 11th choice of the Boston Red Sox. And I think he really thought that was a realistic thing. And then he didn't have a plan B. He didn't have a pivot. He didn't have another move. So that's number one. Second quote right here. This was at the very end of the meetings today, after he came up with nothing. He says, this is a longer quote, but and as I read it, I guess what I want you to observe is he's trying to sound like he's smart. He's trying to sound like he has a plan, and he's trying to sound like he's in control. But the quote doesn't really match his actions so far this winter. So this is what he says. And this is how he's going to acquire two bats, or how he's approaching it, rather. He says, quote, "I think a lot of that will depend on who the players are, or who the player, non-plural, is, and what the offensive profile is. I think we could use someone that hits in the middle of the lineup. We've also talked a ton about driving in runs with runners in scoring position in less than two outs and cutting down on whiff and getting back to the simple things that score runs, whether that's two players, whether that's one who can do both. I think we'll have to see how that plays out." So what I'm getting at here, and this is the crux of everything, this ties it all into me. He doesn't have a plan. He does not have a set plan. He's got nothing that he's pursuing right now. Nothing's imminent. And he didn't even trade an outfielder. And we all assumed that was going to be Jaron Duran. You can't tell me that you can't address a need with one of your outfielders, even if it's Abreu instead of Duran, even if it's Rafaela. There's only one outfielder in this organization that's untouchable. You can't tell me that one of our outfielders isn't desired by another team to where you can address a need. And you don't see this a lot anymore. And I don't think Breslow could really pull it off, but you could do a three-team trade. You could do it. Ben Cherington did it in the 2013 trade deadline to get Jake Peavy. Theo Epstein did it to get Manny Ramirez the hell out of Boston. He's not a talented executive. Nothing got done this weekend, or this week rather. Nothing got accomplished here. Just you traded Vaughn Grissom. You traded for a Rule 5 guy today. You made a deal with Oakland because Breslow is impressed with the metrics or whatever. And you made another minor league deal yesterday. I don't even remember who or what. And that's it. Nothing meaningful got done. and there's no plan. He doesn't know who he's targeting. He doesn't know what he's doing. And I think the best bat that you can acquire right now, well, there's two, Bo Bichette and Ketel Marte. And I definitely don't think you're getting Ketel Marte.
Yeah, I don't think you're getting Bo Bichette either, because I think his market's about to go up now, especially now that Alonso and Schwarber are off the board. He will be considered one of the top bats on the market, especially as an infielder. So his market's about to heat up. His price is about to go up. So his price is already, you know, out of the range for the Red Sox anyway, you know, but it's about to really go up there. And that quote from Breslow, like, it doesn't add up, like you said, because, okay, we're looking for the right type of player. Because we heard this after Devers was dealt, right? That one of the problems they had with Devers, you know, not just Breslow, but Cora too, is that he struck out a ton, right? And, you know, he would go through these stretches where guys are on base and he's just swinging at bad pitches and he's striking out too much. And when the Red Sox got rid of him and they kind of went on that run last season, you heard that. Cora sort of subtly took a shot at him saying, well, the lineup's different now because we have different types of guys in there that aren't, you know, that they're cutting down the strikeouts, they're putting the ball in play more, which we weren't doing earlier in the season. So clearly they don't like the big power hitting, but also swing and miss type of guy. Pete Alonso in 2025 had an OPS over 1,000 with runners in scoring position. He cut down on his strikeout rate. Like, he actually had a good year strikeout-wise. He cut down on them. Now, is he still going to strike out? Sure. But he got better at it. So everything should tell you that, like, he's kind of turning into that profile of player that you want. But because he's going to be 36 at the end of his contract, well, that's too old for us, and that scares us. And it's back to this old typical Red Sox of they're afraid to sign a guy into his mid to late 30s. And I get it. There's a lot of risk with that. We talked, you know, last week about Xander Bogaerts and how bad that contract is going to age. Like, sure, there's risk involved, but you also don't have to give the guy 10, 11 years. 5 years for Pete Alonso, I don't think is going to kill you. Pete Alonso can still hit 35 home runs at age 35. And, you know, if it's down to like 27 at that point, okay, you've only got a few years left. It's not going to kill you. You're the Red Sox. You can do it. But it's just, they just have this ultimate fear of, you know, a guy just dropping off a cliff. Breslow's comments, he just continues to run himself into more trouble because Pete Alonso would have made sense and he knows it. But, you know, he just got outbid. And I honestly think they offered him something like, again, 4 years, 100. And I think Alonso's camp went back to him and said, you know what, throw on a fifth year, bump the AAV up just a little bit, and we'll come to Boston. And Breslow said, we can't do the fifth year. No, that's too much for us. Like, I honestly think he's just that stubborn and that sort of, like, he just doesn't read the room kind of thing. And he just puts his foot down and says, no, I can't go beyond the 4 years. And that's it. So I don't know what his plan is now, whether he's going to pursue Ketel Marte. If he's going to, he better act fast, because I think that's the next bat that's coming off the board. Otherwise, I mean, I guess bring Bregman back. At this point, it's not even really thrilling. The other prospects, like, oh, yay, Bregman's back. Great, give the same team you had last year. You still don't have a first baseman, and you still don't have a number two starter. So he's just getting beat to the punch way too much here. And unless he gets super creative and it's like, okay, he trades for Freddy Peralta and trades for Ketel Marte and brings in Bregman, but I don't think he has the gumption to do that. I don't think he wants to get rid of that many assets. So I would say for Red Sox fans, prepare for, like, maybe Bregman comes back and then some sort of veteran option that you're not going to love for corner infield or, you know, first base. But it's not going to be anything exciting.
I don't think he knows how to trade. Even if he wanted to trade all those prospects, he doesn't know how to navigate any of this because you know what? The more I think about it, which just doesn't make any sense when you just use, like, common sense and logic. And this is, you know, I recognize I'm talking about the SMIB, the smartest man in baseball. I mean, this is a guy that literally had that on his baseball cleats when he was a baseball player, but clearly isn't translating to the front office for Mr. Breslow. But we don't want to sign guys that are in their early to mid 30s because we don't want to deal with them when they get into the latter 30s on these contracts 4 or 5 years, right? But then we hear this morning that Bo Bichette, well, we're out on that because unless that market comes severely down. And Bo Bichette's not asking for a 10-year contract. He's realistically looking for six. He's what, 28 years old? So basically, in 6 years, he'll be the age that we hope to have Bregman at, although Bregman actually will be older if we have him for 3 or 4 years than if we just sign Bo Bichette to 6 years. But that's too rich for our blood. I don't understand what kind of contracts they want to hand out. So you want to find guys in their prime, so mid to late 20s, and give them 3-year deals. What AAV are you going to give them? $70 million a year for 3 years? Like, that's not realistic. It makes no sense. The fundamentals and what we are trying to apply to, like, a process of signing people just makes absolutely no sense. There's no way to win that way because you're not going to get guys that are in their prime or just kind of in the middle or exiting their prime on 2 or 3 year deals. But then you don't want to pay them when they're in their early 30s. You're never going to sign anyone is basically what you're telling me. So, like, why not just say it? We don't want to sign anyone. We want to draft really well, hope they turn out good, and then guess what? When they got to get paid, we'll trade them away. And then even after we pay them, if they complain and moan, we're going to trade them away and get nothing back, a la Devers. It's absolutely asinine at this point. I really don't know what the direction is for this team, but what I could tell you is the guy running the show can't make trades, can't sign anyone, and thinks he's the smartest guy in the room, and he's an absolute dumbass.
He should honestly just resign. He's got to know he's in over his head and he's not executing, and I hope the media doesn't take it easy on him. So we'll see how that all goes. But Jason, you mentioned Bogarts and how we didn't sign him. Nobody cared. We were fine with it. We did not destroy Bloom at all after the Bogarts trade. The dude was breaking down. There was no way he was going to age well into his mid to upper 30s, you know, and I think some of us would have been open to a team friendly deal similar to how he signed the first one with Dombrowski. You know, if it was like 7 years, 175, this would be what, year four of it, which would probably be painful if it played out the way that it has. But I don't think we would have destroyed that either at the time. But we're, you know, smart Red Sox fans knew that Bogarts had some red flags and not to give him that 10-year deal. And AJ Preller, one of the most erratic executives in MLB, did give him the deal. And then he gave Yu Darvish a 5-year deal at age 37. And just some real head scratchers there. But there was no red flags with Alonso. And other than Schwarber, who wasn't a fit, if you're insistent on keeping Yoshida, Pete Alonso was the safest guy to sign in this whole free agency. Safer than Bo Bichette. Safer than Bregman. I would say signing Pete Alonso was probably safer than trading for Ketel Marte, because you don't know what the clubhouse is going to be like once he gets here. I'm sure it'd be fine for a while, but is he going to get through the remaining 5 years with no issues? Sounds like a long shot to me. The Red Sox acted like this Pete Alonso pursuit was the same as the Soto pursuit. At the end of the day, they treated them both the same and then opted not to get the winning bid. That's what this was. And Alonso was, I'm not exaggerating, $550 million cheaper than Juan Soto. That's how bad this is. So when we talk about me being on the fire Breslow bandwagon, I've seen enough. I think his performance this winter is probably his worst one yet. in hindsight, I'll give him a pass on 2024 because he did have a hard cap of $225 million. That's the lowest we've seen. Last year, he made some moves. I had the Red Sox going to the World Series. I didn't complain at all about his performance last winter. His performance during the season, not addressing needs, was the problem, in my opinion. And this winter has just been an absolute dud. There's nothing to suggest he's gonna figure it out. Let's pretend there's no lockout next year. There's nothing to suggest he's gonna have a strong winter next winter and address all the issues, get this roster shored up. I posted on social media a little while ago. When he took over in 2024, the Red Sox had the number one ranked farm. Their infield of the future was Tristan Casas, Trevor Story, and Rafi Devers. 2 years later, coming into his third winter, Trevor Story is the only everyday infielder. And the Red Sox have the 13th ranked farm system. And a lot of people are coming at me, well, Cushman, they graduated, and that's why it drops. Well, yeah, that is why it drops. But what did you do with those prospects? None of them really developed outside of Anthony. Campbell got sent back down. We don't know what Meyer is as a player yet. Right now, he's a platoon guy. That's what he was. That's how he was utilized. And he's injury prone. So he's not a guy we're going to count on. And then you didn't use other pieces of the farm to fortify the roster. You didn't. So it's still a roster full of holes. In other words, what has Breslow done? Like, what's the plan? There is no plan. Go back to the Devers trade that you guys touched on. We all assumed there was a bigger picture. Like, okay, well, by the deadline, we're going to have a big bat and this is all going to make sense and we'll get over it. They didn't get a single bat at the deadline. You got Nathan Lau only because the Washington Nationals DFA'd him. This is a guy who he either doesn't have a plan or can't execute the plan. He's so bad. He's the most incompetent executive we've ever had. He's worse than Heim. Heim got you, at least got you Willier Abreu.
Heim during that farm too.
During the season. So I just, there's nothing left. There's nothing that can convince me Craig Breslow is going to lead this team to the promised land. He's got no people skills. He's got no leadership skills. He's not good at anything.
I mean, he's lucky that he landed the Crochet trade, because that's just about the only reason he's still here. Because that was a good trade, right? I mean, the guys that he gave up, you know, Chase Mydroth is a nice little hitter, but he's not going to burn you in the end. The White Sox are already maybe giving up on Kyle Teal, who was a highlight in that package. So the Crochet trade was great, but yeah, and yeah, you got Bregman, but you got him on a contract that made it so easy for him to walk away afterwards. So it kind of, you know, you put the ball fully in his court. And then Bregman was great in the first half. He sucked after the injury. So I don't think he helped you very much. Aroldis Chapman, sure. But to me, that was lightning in a bottle. No one wanted to touch Aroldis Chapman in the free agent market. Like, he was wasting away in Pittsburgh, where people forgot that he was still pitching. And Breslow took a flyer on him. And yeah, he was awesome. Now, he gave Chapman an extension. Does anyone here think that Aroldis Chapman is going to be as good as he was last year? Because I sure don't. I think you're going to get some serious regression to the mean. So, you know, not a big extension, but that could come back to hurt you a little bit. Apart from Crochet, like, yeah, he hasn't done anything. And this winter, look, I know it's people keep saying it's still early. Okay, well, names are coming off the board. How much longer do you want to wait? Again, Pete Alonso was sitting there like gift wrapped for you, and he blew it. So the only thing he's done is, like, you know, trade for a couple of minor leaguers. And then you mentioned the farm system. It's not just the guys are graduating. Yosinsen Garcia was a top-ranked prospect. You traded him away for Johan Oviedo, who hasn't really pitched. And when he was with Pittsburgh, couldn't throw strikes. And is coming off of Tommy John. But hey, he's, you know, what, 98th percentile extension or something like that. And he's 6'7", he's a moose. So hey, you know, put him in, as people keep calling it, the Bailey lab, which I'm starting to hate that expression now too. I'm like, oh, get him in the Bailey lab. He'll be awesome. Okay, sure he will. Yeah, we'll see about that. Because every pitcher the Red Sox have gotten under Andrew Bailey has flourished, right? So it's just, that's all he's done. And now he's got to go back to Boston, as he says, get back to work. And we'll see. I mean, do you want to trade for Ketel Marte? Okay. You're going to have to give up prospects to do it. You know, are you comfortable doing that? I don't think he is. Do you want to go sign Bo Bichette? Clear. I don't think you do, because you want his market to severely come down. Like, they're just finding every excuse in the book not to make a bold, like, big move. And it's not, like, I'm not asking him to make a big move just for the sake of, you know, pop. It's, no, Toronto's getting better. Baltimore is getting better. The Yankees are going to get better. Like, I know Hal Steinbrenner is crying poor over there, but still the Yankees. Okay, they're still going to try and compete. The Rays are always sneaky good at some point, so they're still going to give you problems. You've got to make a move here to keep up with your division. It's not just for pop. It's not just for people like us who want, you know, news to talk about. It's your whole division is getting better and you're standing still. And as you guys pointed out, maybe even getting worse. So for that reason, he's got to start making some big moves. And I just feel like, once again, the offseason is moving at like a fast pace and it's too fast for him. And he can't keep up and he can't process it. And that's a huge problem.
Well, he also doesn't know how to evaluate talent, because I see people, as far as their comments going back and forth us and Terry's points and whatnot, it's, we could argue all day whether, you know, we made the right trades and, you know, oh, this guy's worth nothing. We sent him back to AA, AAA, whatever. And all that does is show me, and, you know, like, we'll talk about the past where, as an example, Johansson Garcia. Yeah, he didn't bat well when he came up here, right? He probably wasn't ready. That also speaks to the fact that we don't have any talent. We probably should have never brought him up to the bigs, because once you do and people see that, it diminishes their value. But the funny thing is the Sox overvalue everyone until it comes time to actually trading them, and when they actually do send them off. Because the password in any other trade package for any other major executive yields and fetches something much larger. Number one, it's probably not the only player in a trade. It's part of a package. And it's probably bringing back something significant. No, instead we're getting Oviedo, who, listen, I hope we're able to work wonders with him. But to Jason's point, we've been 50-50 at best in the pitchers that we brought in. We brought some guys in and made them a lot better than we thought. And then there's other guys that come in here that we thought were going to be a lot better that didn't even make it through the season. We shipped them out. So it just speaks to a much larger issue that this front office, Craig Breslow in particular, doesn't know how to evaluate his talent. Because when they're at their highest, he holds on to them or he rushes them. Then they come here like Christian Campbell, lit the world on fire for about a month and a half. And now I don't even know what we could trade him for. I would still like to think that there's teams that want him. But, you know, you even think about Tristan Casas. We had a team last year in the Mariners that was willing to make a deal for Tristan Casas. But then we tried to get greedy and throw in freaking Yoshida. And they're like, no thanks. And then what happens? Blows out his patella tendon. He may never be the same again. And even if he is, he wasn't that good to begin with anyway. He had a flash in the pan moment. And we all have been waiting for him to become that player. And he's not. So let's just be honest with ourselves. Now we have to hope he goes back to that, you know, 60-40 good-bad, or a bad-good in that particular case. It just reeks of incompetence, arrogance, and just ineptitude on so many levels. And, I mean, listen, Chaim Bloom was not great. Let's not make any, like, it's not like revisionist history here. But there were things he did better, a lot better than Craig Breslow at this point. He built a good farm system. He spent money. And he didn't pull the trigger at the trade deadline. Outside of the Crochet trade, there's been nothing that Craig Breslow has done that has drastically changed the Red Sox for the better via trade. And he has been inept when he has all these prospects that another GM handed to him, that if you give it to any, like if Dombrowski had this team, could you imagine? We'd be like the Dodgers of the East. We'd have no prospects, but we'd have every freaking star at every position at this point with this farm system, and probably still have a little bit left over, if we're being honest. But he won't do it. And then he won't open the checkbook. He'll put money back in. He knows how to deposit the money back into the bank, but he's not going to spend it, any of it. And it's freaking pathetic at this point.
You know, I wish I could have been a fly on the wall just in the winter meetings. Like, what was Breslow doing? Was he mingling and, you know, shooting the shit with the other executives? Or was he just sitting in his room, you know, in whatever suite he was assigned, just not really engaging, just kind of having a pity party? Nobody is into the deals I'm trying to make. Everybody wants to be overpaid. The other thing too, you know, I'm just at a loss for words, but let's just look ahead real quick. So many question marks. What's this team going to look like? Maybe it's essentially, maybe it's the September team. You know, maybe Costas is ready and he's at first base. Maybe Meyer's back, but maybe it's essentially the September team. Maybe Nate Eaton's in the lineup, you know, because he's so awesome. But you go back to last year, we looked so much better. Devers was the DH. Bregman was the third baseman. We thought Costas was going to be serviceable, or at least I did. And I'll take the L for that for the rest of my life. But you had reasons to be optimistic with this offense. Duran was coming off the best year of his career, you know, was another thing to look at. Now it's like you've got three out of your four outfielders are lefties. Nate Eaton's the only one. Well, actually Rafael, my bad, but you know, he's all defense, no offense anyway. The defense hasn't been resolved. Nothing's been resolved. Nothing. And we got a guy that just doesn't know how to do it. And I think the rotation is super questionable outside of Crochet. Like, there's a lot of question marks. And I think Sonny Gray is going to be, that's not quite going to be as bad as the Kluber situation, but it's going to be close. He's going to have an ERA close to 5, I bet, in this division with a 91 mile an hour fastball. He couldn't handle Yankee Stadium when he was 28 years old. He's not going to handle Fenway Park too well at age 36. And Oviedo, we discussed him. Maybe Bayo can build on what he had last year. I think he's a regression candidate. Alex Cora clearly did not trust him in that playoff game against the Yankees. Lasted 2 1/3. Corey yanks him. You know, maybe Connolly early will build on what he had, but that rotation is just super suspect to me. And Jason, you pointed out the bullpen. I mean, outside of Chapman and Whitlock, who are both regression candidates, hopefully not extreme regression, but right now I'm looking at this team as an upper 70s. In wins, and I think I had him at 93 wins last year. Right now, I think we're looking at 77, 78 wins, and hopefully Breslow's out of there not long after the trade deadline.
Yeah, I don't see how you can give him any more than that, because again, as I pointed out, like your division's getting better actively, so it's going to be harder to win within the division. The rest of the American League, sure, that's up for debate, but yeah, right now they do look like a high 70s, at best low 80s kind of win team that, you know, you're fighting for a wild card spot, but you may not get it. If Sonny Gray, like you mentioned, like if he can't pitch in the American League East, which there's a lot of evidence to suggest that he can't, then it's Crochet and just a bunch of kids for your rotation. Like, I don't know where Brian Bello is at that point, if he's still on the team or if he gets traded, because, you know, after the Oviedo trade, everyone said, well, Bello's probably out of here. But I don't know. Is he, or is Breslau going to be able to facilitate that, or is he going to screw that up too? Yeah, you might feel good about Early and Peyton Tolley, some of those young guys. I don't know if what Cutter Crawford's status is. I kind of frankly don't care. If Cutter Crawford is in your rotation, you probably suck. So, you know, it's not looking good. They have to do something. And yeah, they've got time. They've got time to make some deals. But again, Craig seems to get beat to the punch quite a lot. So if, you know, Peralta goes off the board, or, you know, God forbid, Joe Ryan, I know Minnesota said they'd keep him, but, you know, we'll keep him. But yeah, if we get a Kings ransom for him, which I'm sure the Dodgers would love to give them, then, you know, he'd be on the move too. If Skubal gets traded, you know, like, things are going to happen. And is he just going to sit there and say, well, you know, our models are saying that it's not the right type of player that we want. Like, it's just going to be more bullcrap. So, I don't know. It's hard to feel any bit optimistic right now. And I know there's a lot of fans that get annoyed with us for kind of, you know, I don't know, speaking the truth and saying that he sucked at the winter meetings and didn't do anything and was awful. But that's just the truth. He didn't do anything. He had the chance to do something big. He had the chance to vastly improve this roster, and he let it go by the wayside. And whether it's because he can't handle the negotiation or because the owner is not letting him spend the money, I don't care. I mean, if you want to lump the owner in, sure, but that's kind of low hanging fruit. We all blame John Henry. Yeah, we get it. He operates on a cap. Like, we've been living this way for years. That doesn't mean that you can't find a way to make it work. As the president of baseball operations, as a guy like Craig Breslau, who's supposedly the smartest guy in the room. So, you know, like, you guys want to keep bashing John Henry? Fine. Okay, we can do that. Breslau deserves to be held accountable too, because this week was his chance to make something happen, and he's walking away empty-handed.
He didn't even do any housekeeping either. I mean, you could have moved Sandoval. Somebody would have probably taken the contract at a bare minimum, $12.5 million, just because maybe they needed a fourth or fifth starter. That didn't happen. You know, there were other ways to, if you only moved Jaren Duran, that's $7.5 million. So move those two. That's about 20. That covers Marte for the year. He just didn't even do the little things.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is where he should be held accountable. He's the one coming out here and saying that he has no restrictions. Like, if you behind closed doors are told by your boss you've got financial restrictions, then don't come out to the public and say you don't. Because then when you're hell bent on like, oh crap, well, how am I going to fit this square peg in a round hole? Well, you set yourself up for that, buddy, because you're the one coming out here telling me you've got all the resources to do it. So that's how you look like an idiot and have egg on your face, smartest man in the world. But the truth is, I think we're what, right? Currently 150, maybe a hair over $150 million with this roster. Last year we went into the season, I think, with like $222 million. So we're still talking about $72 million. I mean, I don't know. Could have signed Pete Alonso, even at $35 million. I mean, there's half. We actually still have a little bit more than half. If you trade for Ketel Marte and you're probably giving up a couple of MLB players to do so, that probably washes itself out. Even if it costs you, let's just say $12 million extra. Okay, now you're at about $50 million spent. You still have $20 million to go, you know, bolster your bullpen or go make some other moves. Go get us a real number two. And again, if you do that, you're probably trading more, which means you're getting more money off the books to be able to do it. So, I mean, there's a million ways to get us there. And the truth is, who says we even have to be spending exactly what it was last year? Because 222, that, I mean, we're still so far beyond that 264 threshold that everyone talks about as far as that second tier. I mean, it's the optics, the messaging, it's all bullshit at this point. And the truth is, it's like the fans want to get mad at us. We didn't come up with this rhetoric. The team did. Your president of baseball operations came out and said you were going to spend more, and he hasn't spent a dime. Not a dime. He improved our bullpen today by trading for a Rule freaking 5 pick. that he's already jazzed up about and talking about how he's going to compete for a bullpen spot. Whoopity-doo. I mean, well, he has to. I know he has to, but he has to because of him.
A Rule 5 guy has to stay on the roster the full year, and if not, we have to return him. So he will be on the roster. Yeah.
And then he comes out and with these word salads of basically giving you every definition of what we need, and the definition is freaking Pete Alonso. And then he doesn't sign him. It's like, how many more times are we going to do this, guys? And then you get frustrated with us, like this is our fault. We didn't do this. We're just the ones calling bullshit when no one else wants to.
Yeah, no, we're the ones hitting the BS button, because I'm not going to sit here and jazz up some Rule 5 guy that they traded for. I'm making a prediction right now. They're going to return him. He's going to suck, and they're going to return him. Because I looked into this guy. I'd never heard of him. I looked at him like, this guy's going to suck. Like, that's just because it's Bressel trying to be creative and trying to be the smartest guy in the room, which he's done before with other pitchers. Like, and it doesn't work. This guy's not going to work out either. So it's just, again, it's like, sorry. Like, we're going to call it out. Just, it is what it is. Is there anything that Breslow can do within the next, let's call it, I don't know, 4 or 5 days? So until beginning of next week, is there anything he can do that would, like, bring you guys off the cliff? I know, Terry, you're on the fire Breslow train. Would you get off the train?
He's got a hole in the train. He's ready to, like, take off at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he would have to get really creative. I would still try to make a deal for Tatis. I think that's an impact move. He's making less than what you would have paid Alonso. It takes him till age 35 or so. It was a similar timeline as what the Devers deal would have been. I would still take Marte as well, but I don't think he has it in him. He has the pieces, but I think every GM across the league thinks he's a moron. And I think Breslow kind of knows that he's a moron, and perhaps he's burned some bridges. Perhaps there's just some that just, I don't know, but everyone was apparently asking about the outfielders, and he didn't get it done. And, you know, the dollar amounts were too high. Just the guy just doesn't have it. And Sam Kennedy, by the way, is he in the witness protection program? He better just not go near a microphone, honestly. But I think the best thing that could happen is just get rid of him. And I know that's not rational at this point, and it's never happened that I'm aware of in the middle of a winter, but that would be the biggest impact move the Red Sox could make. And let Theo be the interim guy for the rest of the year and let him handle business. Cause I guarantee you moves would happen and the anxiety level would drop. And we would, I don't know, with the names off the board now, I mean, you can't undo the fact that Alonso's already gone and all that. But this is a nightmare. And it's almost like a prison sentence. And I think 15 years from now, we're still going to be looking back at 2018 as the last championship we won. And it's kind of sad to think about that it all ended after that. It was just a slow, painful decline. And I don't know what else to say, but I'm done with Breslow. I don't think that was the longest winded answer ever to a simple question. I don't think there's anything he can do.
If I was Craig Breslow, the only thing I could think of to try and fix this, because even with what Terry just said, like, if they traded for Tatis, I'd be happier than a pig in shit. But I don't know how much better that really makes our team. I mean, it makes it better than last year, but I don't know if it's enough at this point. He's only one bat. And we still have so many damn holes to fill. And I'm not saying this. And I also just think Tatis is so unrealistic for us at this point. Like, he can't even navigate trading Jaron Duran. But I'm going to mix a blend of a little bit more realistic, at least what I think he could do, that would fill all these needs. You've already got the wheels turning on Ketel Marte. Find a way to get that deal done. We have the prospects. Get it done. You want to get super creative? We have a plethora of outfielders. I know we want to hang on to Seydon Rafaela. However, I think with the deal he's on and what he brings to the table defensively with his glove, he would be a perfect fit for a team like the Tampa Bay Rays that don't have a ton of finances, although it seems like they have more than us with the way they're spending this offseason in comparison. I would trade him, maybe even a low-level prospect on top of it for Yandy Diaz and try and get him on an extension that gives us a little bit of pop. So now you got Ketel Marte at second base. You've got Yandy at first base. And then I would put as much effort as I could in trying to find us a real number two because we will still have prospects. Tarik Skubal is unrealistic. Go out there and get me a Reagans, a Gore, or even a Peralta because our names have been tied to him at this point. To me, that's a much more realistic path to being able to get that pop. It's not Alonso Diaz, but it's closer than anything we're going to get on the free agent market at this point. The wheels are already turning on Ketel Marte, and there's starters out there that are not Tarik Skubal that could still give us a true number two and make this team better. That's a team that I think could at least compete for an American League title, provided no one else gets drastically better.
I like it. I think, yeah, because I'm kind of with you on reaching out to the Royals. I think the Royals are one of those teams that's really high on Jaron Duran. So put together a package, go get Cole Reagans, and you know what? See if you can get a package that also gets you Vinny Pascatino. There's your first base problem solved. Now, he's a lefty, but he's got a little bit of pop. They're going to phase him out of first base because that kid they called up last year, Caglinoni, is a first baseman by trade. They stuck him in the outfield because they were trying to compete with Pascatino as well, but he's a first baseman by trade. So get Pascatino and Reagans from the Royals, headline the package with Duran and some prospects, you know, whatever that turns out to be. And then, you know, maybe at that point, I don't know if you can trade for Marte, depending on how much it takes to get that deal done. But then at that point, get Bregman back, you know? And look, it doesn't thrill me, but I don't know what else you do at third base for the foreseeable future. I really don't. I don't like the idea of Meyer playing over there full-time. I'd rather Meyer go to, like, second base. Or, you know, better yet, I'd rather Trevor Story go to second base, Meyer go to short. But, you know, we'll see if they have the balls to have that conversation with him when they wouldn't do that with Devers. So, probably not. But that's what I would do. Like, I would go for, like, a Reagans-Pascatino type of package. And then see if you can get Bregman back to play third base. And hopefully Meyer's healthy. He can play second base. And you go from there. I think something like that would be, it'd be good. It still wouldn't take the sting off of not getting a guy like Pete Alonso. And it still wouldn't be as good as like an offseason of Alonso, Marte, and a number two. But given what we've seen, I think that's probably the best you're going to get is something like that from Breslow. So I would take it. I wouldn't say it's going to, like, you know, put me all the way back on, like, yeah, he's a great, you know, PBO. Like, no, I'd still probably have, like, as Chris said, one toe on the fire Breslow train. But I would at least tell the conductor, hold off on taking off for a little bit. Let's see where we are by July 31st.
I think you could make those trades for Vinny Paz, Reagans, and still have enough to get Marte. I actually do think you could do that.
You know, I really like the idea of Rafaela for Yandy Diaz. And I like it because it gets the Rafaela money off the books. I don't know what the AAV on it is. It's probably like 8 or 10 million. It wasn't a ton.
Yeah, it's about 9 million.
Very similar to what Campbell was or is. So when I talk about housekeeping and getting rid of Sandoval, that's a deal you can do. Now, I hate to get rid of a right-handed bat, but we don't have him for his bat anymore. So, yeah, 1 year for Yandy, I would do it.
He doesn't. I would even try to get him on an extension of 2 to 3 years, Yandy Diaz.
Well, I wouldn't. I'd address that after the season. I mean, he's not going to command a massive deal.
Agreed.
Yeah, I just see how he plays. But just for the heck of it, I mean, he's 34 years old. I wanted to see how his second half numbers were. He actually batted 309 with an on base just over 400. So he didn't break down over the season. And, you know, I think Fenway Park would, you know, would be good for him. And we have a huge core of Hispanic players. So I just think it would, it's just a natural fit, I think. And
hire Terry?
Yeah, I would do it. Breslow, I'm not going to say that, but just simple moves that could be made. And I think the Padres still value Duran a lot too. So, you know, I don't, there's just no reason to expect he's gonna do anything crafty. And here's another thing. This will be my final thought. The full throttle comments from 2 years ago will live forever. You know, that's the full throttle season. I think the number two pitcher thing is going to be the new full throttle. Maybe not quite as intense, but all season long, Sonny Gray is going to have that label and he's going to be pitching like a number five. And Red Sox fans aren't going to let Breslow forget it. And someone will have the big bat label. Whoever we do end up getting, but right now you're looking at the September roster.
Yeah, no, you're probably right. And you know, you mentioned Duran, San Diego, Kansas City. There's a lot of teams that value him and Abreu. So that I think is the next sort of, again, I mentioned it the other night, but that's the next big test, right? He's probably gonna have to trade one of those guys this winter. So can he make a good trade? Can he pull it off? You know, we'll see. I kind of have my doubts, especially after this week. This week was a little bit scary. If you're thinking that Breslow is going to put together a masterful offseason, this was not a good start. So we'll see what happens over the next several days. Obviously, the winter meetings have concluded. Breslow's back in Boston. So now news might be a little bit slower trickling out, but we'll see. At this point, GMs have met. Deals are starting to be made. Phone calls are starting to be made. So at any point at this point from now until February, a deal could happen. So if it does, we'll be right here. We'll come on with you guys and we'll talk about it. But hopefully it's something good because nights like this are not good for our health. it's going to be a long winter if it's going to be like this. So hopefully we have some good news on the horizon. If we do, again, take a look at your Twitter feeds. Keep an eye on that. We'll be right here live every time something happens. So for now, we're going to say goodnight. Everyone have a good rest of your night. Have a good weekend. We'll talk to you all later. Take care.
Hey, hockey fans. Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.